Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 20th, 2004. Today's session number is BRD 2004-07. Today's speaker is David Brauerike. The lesson for today is God's Church, My Vocation, Discernment, Support, Blessing. Mother, May I? Continued from yesterday. Let's listen in.
Burn that CD. It's 10:45. We're going to get going. A few people I know who are out saying goodbye on the bus, and we may be joined by others. But this is a series of classes called God's Church, My Vocation, Discernment, Support, Blessing. My name is Dave Brauerike, and I'm a parish pastor in Eastern Oregon. Anybody who was not here yesterday? Okay, fair enough.
Start all over.
We'll start all over. No, we won't start all over. I will do a little. We are talking about being summoned out by God. This is the middle of a two-week series, but this week's focus for me is family. The whole theme is being summoned out by God. We're talking about vocation. Vocation being those places of service or life stations, life pursuits, where we find ourselves, where God works through us for the benefit, creation, and sustaining of the world. This week, we're talking about those vocations which are family-oriented, being fathers, mothers, children, husbands, wives, spouses, partners, those places where we are at in service, whether we want to be or not, in which God is doing something for the world, and in which as Christian people, as well as non-Christians, you know, we are called to be present for, so that God can work through us. Being a mother or father is not a Christian thing. It is a human thing, you know? So like most of our vocations, it's not solely a church issue by any means. So as we talk about issues with vocations and family relationships, we're also talking about how we as community, both Christian community and secular community, define and decide upon how these structures function and what the parameters are on them. And I think it will not take much imagination on your part to begin to see all the ways in which family has become a political hot potato and a ground of turf taking between church and state and all that sort of stuff. So we're just jumping into that. All right, that's just kind of where we're at. Yesterday we, all right, let's make this machine work. Yesterday we looked at a case study. I called it a stirring the pot session. We looked at this family, which is the Lofton family. And we won't redo that session, but let me briefly tell you something about the Loftons. Steve Lofton, a pediatric nurse in a Miami hospital in the late 1980s. This young man here, Frank, was born in that hospital to an AIDS mother, a mother who had AIDS. He was born HIV positive. His birth mother, his biological mother, knowing she was going to die, asked, begged, requested the nurses who had cared for her and her son so well if one of them would not take her child. Steve Lofton said he would. Now, HIV children, HIV positive children, are generally considered in Florida at least to be not adoptable. So the state put Frank in Steve's care as a foster child, what any reasonable person would consider to be a permanent placement, because the child's not adoptable. This young woman here, Tracy, Frank's now, I think he's about 16 in this picture. Tracy, who's about the same age, was born just a few months after this arrangement. The state came back to Steve and said, would you take another one? HIV positive. There was another little girl who has died. She was HIV positive, Ginger, also severely drug addicted at birth. Steve took her as a foster child. She died at the age of 6. This young man, Bert, came a year or so later, HIV positive. State asked Steve if he would take them. At that point, he had 4 children. This is Steve's partner, Roger. They are a gay couple. In the late 1990s, they moved to Portland because Steve's family was there. And when they went and found new doctors, all those things you do as a family when you move, the pediatrician meeting Steve, Roger, hearing their story, was so impressed. He said, you know what? We've got two kids here, ages 5 and 8, Wayne and Ernie. Or you cannot place, would you take them into foster care as well? Steve and Roger did. So that's how this family was formed. At the age of 3 or 4, Bert seroreverted. You know, those of you who are medical people will know more about that than I will. So essentially what it means is he no longer tested positive for HIV. So he's clean. And some immune deficiency diseases will do that in early years with people. At that point, the state of Florida, who knew this young man only as baby boy Doe, told Steve that they were now going to seek an adoption placement for Bert. Steve said, may I adopt him? They gave him forms. One of the questions on the forms in Florida for adoption is, what is your sexual orientation? Florida has the only anti-gay adoption law in the United States. They do not allow gay people to adopt children. Steve left it blank. They said, who are you trying to fool? And they said, you will not adopt this child to you. However, the caseworker, Bert's caseworker, who knew this was a good placement, wrote into the family's file, to Bert's file, a permanency goal. That is, we, the social worker, family, are going to try to find a way to make this a permanent relationship. Steve decided his only option to deal with this was to challenge the state of Florida's laws on anti-gay adoption, went to court. Long story short, years, you know how legal stuff goes, you know, going through a series of courts in Florida, unable to find any sense that the Florida law was unconstitutional or that Florida could not do that. About the age of 9 or 10, a new caseworker came to the fore for Bert, called up Steve and said, we are now actively seeking a new placement for Bert. Bert came incidentally to this family at the age of 9 weeks. So the only family Bert's ever known. Steve said, would you hold on that till we are through with the courts? Social worker and the state said, no, we will not. We're going to actively seek a new placement. However, he may stay with you till we find one. Bottom line is, January, Lofton's exhausted all the remedies within the Florida courts, found no relief there for their situations, went to federal courts. January 24th of this last year, 11th Circuit Court of Appeals said to Steve Lofton, if Florida wants to run their business that way, they can do it. You may not adopt this child. Now on hold with Bert, that's their situation. What I asked you yesterday to stir the pot was whether or not this was a family. And who's responsible for that definition? Who has a stake in that sort of thing, right? And what I was trying to get at, and you did very well with, in fact, I think the bottom line was, you all said, it depends who's asking and why you're asking whether or not this is a family. Legally speaking, in the state of Florida, this is not a family. Legally speaking, in the state of Florida, this is not a family because there are no legal ties of parenthood or marriage. You with me? In our hearts, every one of us yesterday when we went through this in detail said, oh my heavens, this is a family. Are you going to take this child out of this family? So that's where we were at yesterday. Okay? Anybody have any midnight dreams, whispers of the spirit, or things you need to say about that before we move on? All right. Today we're going to move on to a little broader discussion. We're going to ask the is this a family question one more time, and then we're going to move on to a more helpful question. All right? You ready? Lights, camera, action. This is Bob. This is Susan. They went to the county courthouse, paid $60, got a marriage license, went to the local Lutheran pastor, pulled out the green hymnal, married them. Okay? After a year or so, Susan gave birth to a little girl, Sally. Another year or so, she gave birth to a little boy, Bob Jr. Is this a family? I'm not trying to trick you. Is this a family?
Sure.
Yes, of course it is. Yes, you're saying yes, of course it is. Heads are bobbing. Why do you say that?
Married with children, we weren't.
Married with children, that's what we've always learned, the way it works.
That's the way it always worked for me.
But it always worked for me that way, okay? More.
Adam and Eve.
Adam and Eve.
State and the church's blessing.
Has both the state and the church's blessing recognition. This is the way that okay. Here, I think, yes.
I was just going to say, I think it's those people's intention that it's a family, too.
Okay.
Maybe we could assume that.
All right. Thank you. We got three factors you're going to bring together. One, this group of people intends to be a family and be seen as a family. Two, the church says they're a family. Three, the state says they're a family. We're all in agreement, right? All right? We're all in agreement that's a family. And with that, shall we call it traditional family model, we're all in agreement, that helps if we all agree, right? Functions fairly well. So if a problem arises, we've got some sense of how we're going to deal with that. Right? If Bob is an abusive husband, Sue can go to courts and get some remedy for that. All right? If the courts and Susan's agree, and Bob is taken from his family as a husband, to a disillusionment of marriage, no longer a husband, he is still nonetheless a father. The state will say, you need to take care of these kids, and, right?
Okay.
Adam and Eve, church, state. Do you want to say that this is sort of the main pattern for family? Or the kind of root definition? Now I am trying to trick you. I'm not trying to trick you, but I'm asking you a tougher question. Do you want to call this a blueprint or a archetype?
Called what?
Bob, Susan, kids.
Man, woman, within a marriage?
I mean, that's
man, woman, married.
Married.
2.5 kids.
Is the norm? Is that what you're asking?
Or
it's a norm?
I don't know the right word I'm asking here.
Schema, I think, in psychology is the word that's used to describe the thing that you would automatically think of.
Okay.
It's a traditional family.
Traditional family schema. Okay.
I think you get, if you take Bob out of there,
uh-huh,
and you divorce the two,
yeah,
there's still a family relationship between Bob and kids.
Yeah.
If you have no kids and you divorce them, then there's not family between husband and wife, but I think it's those relationships, irrespective of whether it's, and even if they're not married and they have, quote, illegitimate kids, you've still got family relationships between parent and child and between siblings, and it seems to me, and so I don't know, it seems to me the relationships are the important thing between husband and wife, between husband and wife and kids, or between parents and kids. And it's those relationships, in my mind, that make, quote, family more than whether they're, quote, legally married or separated or whatever. That's
Les is speaking to us very articulately out of one side of his mouth as an attorney, out of the other side of his mouth as a Christian. Where there is congruence, we'll talk about relationships. Talking about relationships here, that's what makes a family, relationships and responsibilities. If you take Bob out, there's still some relationships and responsibilities, you still got a family. If you divorce a couple without children, there's no more family because there's no more relationships, all right? And that's what he's trying to say. And just as
he didn't say that. Did he say that?
No more, yeah. Well, that was the lawyer part.
Yeah.
At least, well, I don't know, I shouldn't speak for you, but legally speaking, yeah, once the marriage is dissolved, no children, you've divided up the stuff, there may well be no more legal relationships between them.
Although I recognize there are situations in which even though
spouses
have split legally, yeah, they're still the best of friends and continue on a relationship. I don't know if I would necessarily legally call it marriage, but it's certainly a relationship. I just was trying to say.
Yeah, I'm thinking family.
I was trying to think that the relationship was, to me, was important.
And what we want to get at here is, what I'm trying to get at here, is that as we, for whatever reason, need to deal with variations on the theme, all right, then the question of what's family, how it functions, how we care for each other, becomes a little more specified and difficult.
I think it's a good idea to focus on the relationships because I would guess that that particular setup of married couple and kids is maybe not the majority anymore, and if it is, not by very much. And there are many families that are one parent or step parents and stepchildren. And so the question would be, yeah, maybe there's a divorce, but like you said, is there a familial relationship between those parents still and the children? Do they make co-decisions? Or is there a legal parent who is really not the family?
Okay. So, real quickly, list for me variations on the theme. Can I say that?
Mm-hmm.
List for me variations. Other sorts of families, other configurations of family. You said single parent.
How about also married adults with their own children and them together, or some together?
Okay. Single parent.
Extended families, like grandparents raising.
Extended family. Well, you understand with that term that what we're talking about is grandparents raising grandkids, okay? And Ani, you said married, no children.
Or bringing their own children.
Blended families.
Yeah, blended. Yes.
Blended family.
Not married with children.
Not married. With children.
Foster children, adopted children.
Foster, adopted.
I've known some families that have six children and suddenly the husband has a heart attack and he's gone.
Okay, single parent. Single parent by virtue of death of a spouse, single parent by virtue of divorce.
Or how about siblings that wind up raising their kids, both parents?
Kids raising kids. Kids raising kids, I guess maybe we should think about that as young mothers, but I'm talking about, you were talking about older siblings raising younger siblings.
How about grandparents raising kids?
Grandparents raising kids.
Same-sex families.
Same-sex families. Like Loftons.
Which could take place in all of those different configurations, too.
Yes, all permutations, all of the above.
Square it.
Interracial. Huh? I only have so much boardroom, it's a variety of families. So that's why we're moving from the question, is this a family, to what's the variety of families, okay? That's the shift that's going on today. You told me yesterday, I don't want to talk about whether that's a family. Of course it's a family. I mean, if you're speaking to my gut or my soul or my spirit, the Loftons are a family, for heaven's sakes. And your issue was not, does the state of Florida have the right to define that, so much as, how can the state of Florida be more helpful in this situation? Is that fair? That's where I come down. I mean, the state of Florida, kingdom of the left in Christian discussion, has a responsibility and duty to define and protect family. But sometimes, in Mark Brocker's language from Ethics, you can do an extreme circumstance. And Mark called that an extreme circumstance yesterday. For heaven's sakes, anybody who looks at the Loftons, five functional, healthy, loving, kids who've been HIV and drug addicted, raised by these two men, are going to say, this is a family, bless them. The Miami Herald called this the family that love built, blesses them. Florida has given them a prestigious foster parent award that they developed just for them. You know, and we all say, this is a family. You know, and Florida's just wrong, so how do you fix that, okay? So we're shifting from, is this a family, to the varieties of ways families come across. But I want to start here. Let me yak at you for a minute. I just have been, but let me do it for another minute. You mentioned Adam and Eve. I find as I discuss family, marriage with people in the Christian church, that a lot of them want to get biblical. And a lot of us recognize that our understanding of family comes from a tradition, Judeo-Christian tradition, which roots in the scriptures. So we might go back to Genesis 2:28. That thing of life, I can't read glasses on. The rib that the Lord God take from the man, he made into a woman, and brought her to the man. The man said, this at last is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called, if you look at your Bible, it's got a capital W with a footnote. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of capital M footnote man. Therefore, a man leaves his father and his mother and clings to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. That passage. Let me talk to you for a moment about the context in which our traditional model of family comes from. Right? And we'll start with the capital W, capital M footnote. Up until this point in Scripture, the word man has been the word Adam in Hebrew, Adam, which in Hebrew functions like the word man functions in English. It can mean either a male person or people in general. All right? It is the archetype human being, man. Okay? There is no female version of Adam in Hebrew. It doesn't exist. So you are talking about man. We're talking about either an individual male or we're talking about human beings together. That's the assumed norm. Patriarchy. All right? In that last text, the capital W woman footnote, capital W, capital M footnote man, those are different words. In Hebrew, those are the words, she shall be called ishaha, ishaha, which means female person or wife, same word, because she's taken from isha, which means male person or husband, same word. Okay. So you have this man word out here, but then you have these complementary words, female and male, you know, woman, man, husband and wife. Okay. You also have in Hebrew lots of other very interesting words. I won't do them all for you. But you have the word omal, which means a young woman or a virgin. If you are female in the Old Testament, you've got two choices. You're either a virgin or a wife. They're the only words available to describe you. You are a virgin or a wife. There's also a word like that, which means young man or boy, hidden one. Don't know if that's a reference to male virginity or not, but it's used in that way. You have words for boy and girl, male child. You have the word for a menstruous woman. So you can be a virgin or a wife or an unclean woman in your menstrual period where you're put aside. There is no male equivalent to that word. But there is the word Baal, which means lord or master or husband for men. There's no female equivalent to that word. All right? There is the word Almanah, which means a widow. It's a female-related word. There is no male equivalent to that. Widow means, in the Old Testament Hebrew, somebody who is forsaken, who is left out of the system. So as a woman, you can be left out of the system. You can be a woman. There is no male version of that word. You can't be left out of the system. You can't be without access to resources. There is no Hebrew word for bachelor in the Old Testament, because it's not a reality. There's no Hebrew word for bachelor. There's also no Hebrew word for a gay person, either lesbian or homosexual. There's the word, one more, just kala, which means a young bride or daughter-in-law. It comes from the word to make complete. A bride makes a man complete. But the male form of that, chatan, which means husband, means to pick up legal property. So in the Hebrew, a woman makes a man complete. A man completes a legal arrangement with his father-in-law, in those words. So my point here is that the traditional family model, as we know it in the Bible, comes within a cultural, religious, legal context, which has a lot of definition about how that works and what your role in that is. It is confining to our way of thinking, right? You cannot exist in this culture without being married in a heterosexual marriage. Marriages were arranged, right? For the most part of the Old Testament. Think of any stories of arranged marriages? Happens all the time, right? Most marriages were arranged so that you're not left without somebody to marry. Somebody, matchmaker, make sure that everybody's paired up in a way that works for the community as a whole. What's love got to do with it? All right. Marriage happens in that sense. You marry and have family and children and make these economic arrangements for the well-being of the community as a whole, for survival's sake. And at the same time, while it's restrictive in our way of thinking, it's also very functional for community on the edge. It's clear, right? It's clear. Everybody has their place, everybody has their job, we survive and we don't do it well. But that's the cultural context in the Old Testament. But now let me ask you this question. Any of these variations in family exist in the Old Testament?
Sure. Yes.
Absolutely. Tell me some stories.
Ruth and Naomi.
Ruth and Naomi, wonderful story of Ruth and Naomi. Number one, Mahon and Chilion, who you may not remember from the story, who were Naomi's sons, are involved in interracial marriages from the get-go. Naomi's one of those foreign wives that they marry. Okay? So they've got interracial marriages, all right? The Old Testament has a mixed view of that, if you read it from cover to cover. Usually it's okay. Every once in a while, somebody gets their backup and they tell everybody to get rid of their foreign wives. Yeah. Okay. Interracial marriages. Naomi is a forsaken one. Is she not? The whole book of Ruth, go back and read it tonight, it's your assignment. The whole book of Ruth is a test of whether the community will acknowledge a forsaken one and bring her back into functionality. It's the whole point of the book. Yeah. Okay. So we got widows, we got interracial marriages, we've got some more stories.
Yeah, what is like Abraham and Ishmael?
Okay.
Where do they?
Let's start with Abraham and Sarah. Infertility. Somebody mentioned infertility yesterday. It's not a new issue for us. Sarah's not having kids. The sense of family is being violated here by the absence of children. How did the community resolve that one? Well, Sarah said, under this model, you can't be family without kids. Try Hagar. So you have polygamy, blessed polygamy, as a model of family. Children out of a different wife, okay, Ishmael. Okay, so that the family inheritance might go on, the family might go on, the family name might go on. Okay, so that's not this model. What do we got here? We got this model. Okay. We got this model with Abraham, Sarah, and maybe you don't like that way. They're over here, I don't know, but with Ishmael, that now has become a family for their way of thinking about it. But then the Lord comes, blesses Sarah. She gives birth to Isaac. Right? And now this part of the equation is not so comfortable for people. Right? That's the story. How are we going to deal with this? Okay. And the Bible, if you read the story of Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar, seems to be mixed about whether they dealt with the complexity very well. That is, whether kicking Hagar and Ishmael was really the right thing to do. Any more variations on the theme? We're just getting started in the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the Bible.
Mary and Joseph?
Ha ha! Mary and Joseph. Let's not put too sharp a point on it. What do we have here? An unmarried couple, right? Pregnant out of wedlock. How is the community going to deal with this? Will it be accepted as their way to do that? You remember the discussion about how Joseph dealt with that in the book of Matthew? He was a righteous man, so he was going to kick her out quietly so as not to shame her. Her shame could just grow within her, and he was going to do the best he could, right? Angel says, that's not a very good solution. Any other family models from the Old Testament examples? The question is not whether this is a family, whether this is legitimate. Are Mary, Joseph, and Jesus a family? Are Abraham, Sarah, Ishmael, Hagar a family? That's not the question. That's not the Old Testament question. The Old Testament question is found in several passages throughout the Old Testament. For example, Exodus 22, the law, right? You shall not wrong or oppress a resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not abuse the widow or the orphan, the non-standard family. You shall not abuse the widows or the orphans. If you do abuse them, when they cry out to me, I will surely heed their cry, says the Lord. My wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword. And your wives will become widows, and your children will become orphans. then you can think about it again from the grave, huh? Or the prophets who come at this theme again and again. Isaiah chapter 1, 21 through 23. How the faithful city has become a whore, says Isaiah. She that was full of justice, righteousness lodged in her, but now they're murderers. Your silver has become dross, your wine is mixed with water. Your princes are rebels and companions of thieves. Everyone loves a bribe and runs after gifts. They do not defend the
widow
or the orphan. They do not defend the orphan. The widow's cause does not come before them. And you call yourself God's people.
Was Moses adopted by Pharaoh's daughter? How does he fit into the family situation?
Yeah, that's another good example from the Old Testament, adoption. Moses is adopted by Pharaoh's family, I think. I mean, they don't have, he didn't go to the adoption office like we did, but it becomes part of that family. But there's adoption, also adoption in the Old Testament. Adoption being a clear way so everybody knows that this is, you know, Paul talks about the Galatians. Adoption, that means you're part of the family legally, officially, everybody agrees, no difference. Biological. Moses is adopted, so he becomes an Egyptian.
Because it was a question.
So there's lots of variety in styles of family in the Old Testament, as well as in our life today. The Old Testament question I'm trying to suggest to you was not, you're not a family, don't bother me. The question was, says the Lord, if you are God's people, how are you going to deal with the non-standard family? The widow, the orphan. Can you make the laws stretch? Can you find a way to care for it? It's the book of Ruth. Exactly the book of Ruth. Can you find a way to bring this in? Of course, in the book of Ruth, there's a much more delineated system of who's responsible. It is not possible in the Old Testament to be a widow unless you are forsaken by somebody who has responsibility for you and they don't do your job. If there is a widow, somebody's not being faithful. That's the Old Testament law. So Naomi and Ruth, if you remember the story, as they run into Boaz, remember? Ruth goes out gleaning. Boaz is a nice guy, good churchman, elder, sees her gleaning, takes care of her a little bit, helps her out, gives his offering. Ruth comes back, tells Naomi goes, bingo, I've got property, I just have no way to get to it. My husband had property, I have no way to get to it, I have no access as a woman. Boaz is part of the family, part of the extended family. Boaz is supposed to take care of us. But I can't go and knock on his door and tell him that. He's got to figure it out. So the book of Ruth is, well, dumb males figure out their responsibilities. All right. So Ruth, well, this is not a Bible study, Ruth, but what's the story? Naomi and Ruth say, how are we going to get to this guy? And Naomi does what women often have to do to get men to think. She says, Ruth, here's what I want you to do. Take a shower, spruce yourself up, a little perfume, go late at night to the barn after harvest when he's had a few drinks, and lay down beside him, and, in a verse that's not clear, uncover his feet and see what happens. All right. Boaz wakes up, finds his feet uncovered. A beautiful woman smelling nice beside him goes, whoa, what's going on here, you know? And she says, I'm Ruth. And he's sober enough to say, oh, I get the message. He has a choice between taking advantage of her with no consequences. He has a choice of just telling her to go away and ignoring his responsibility. Or he's got a choice of getting down to business and listening to the prophet Isaiah, who says, how can there be a widow in your midst? So, Boaz goes to court the next day, says, let's get this legal matter settled. Marries Ruth. She has a child. And the punchline of the book of Naomi is what? And the book of Ruth is what?
David.
And David is termed a child of Naomi. Ruth gives birth to a child fathered by Boaz, and it is Naomi's son. Why? Because if Naomi has no children, her husband has no legacy, and there is no family, and the name stops, and the inheritance stops, and the will of God through that line stops. Old Testament law says if I die and have no children, my wife marries my brother and has children by him in my name. She told me she won't do that. But you understand why the Old Testament law works that way. So the question, so where we're going here is, are we doing okay? You with me? Okay? So my question today is there a standard model of family, for lack of a better word? Because when we discuss this in churches, everybody thinks there is. Right? I mean, a lot of you are sitting through conversations in your churches on gay and lesbian marriages and thinking, that ain't right. It ain't the way God did it with Adam and Eve. How many times have I heard God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve? You know that sort of stuff? How many times have you heard that? Why do people say that? Because this is deeply rooted into our psyches and consciousness, right? But what I want you to, and I want to affirm that. I mean, that's debatable, I think, but I want to affirm that this exists in our way of thinking, at least. Yeah, the standard model for family. But understand the context in which that model functions in the Old Testament. Understand that other families existed. And understand that the Old Testament question was, not these folks, they're doing fine. But those folks. Talk to me for a minute. How are we doing? Where are we at?
In what way?
What are you hearing? What are you thinking? What do you like? What don't you like?
I'm pretty sure.
Are you bored?
Hardly.
I guess just for the purpose of throwing it out, because I'm not sure I agree. I don't agree with it. But this whole structure seems to be community, family, making sure that the name continues, the children are continued, that there's nobody left out. But I don't think that speaks to the male-male, female-female. I mean, so far as family continuation, property division, all of that. I'm not saying that I am there, but I see this maybe as a distinction that isn't real, but to bring it current now, to feel good and to feel fair and perfectly acceptable to me to say, what's the big deal? I don't have a problem with defining marriage between two males or two females, but from a biblical historical context, I am not able yet to make that link. And maybe that's an irrelevant question, but it's...
No, it's not irrelevant. Let me unpack that. Number one, first thing I heard Les says was, your discussion of family has to do with perpetuation of a family line and property going down, okay?
And the name.
And the name. Understand that is a very important Old Testament principle. When Israel came, Laurel will be talking about empire after Exodus today. It'll be very interesting. It's after the session, go to that. When Israel comes out of wandering into the promised land, God says, this property is for this family, 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 for perpetuity so that you're taken care of. So it is indeed all about protection of family name, passing down the farm, make sure everybody's got a job. So family takes on that structure midway through the Old Testament. And if you don't have sons to take the farm, you've got a big problem. Because God set up in a certain way. So that part, yes, you know, okay. My question has been, what about non-standard families? And I think what you're saying, Les, is, well, talking about single parents or blended families are a pretty big jump from talking about same gender heads of families. Okay? The jump I'm trying to make is twofold. One, we need to know where this model is not true in our world. Okay? And two, even though our blend of non-traditional families may be different in our culture, is the question the same? Given the fact that some families, the families are this way in our culture, is the question of vocation of family, what God's trying to do there, one that we can still talk about in a similar manner. We'll come back to it.
I think there's another trick in all of this. If you go back to what you said at the very beginning of what the meaning of the word Adam, if you're going to use a biblical model, I mean, the role of women has changed. I mean, women were not people, they were chattel. And so if you've got a family where the only people are the men and the rest are property, it's very hard to equate that with the way I understand my marriage and family.
Let's make a list of these things. Incidentally, I'm not just talking about gay families here. That's one version of non-traditional family. And we will focus on it later in the week because the ELCAs deal with that. But that's not the only non-traditional. So we can talk about that one, but it's one of many, okay? But yeah, what has changed or what exists in our world that colors the conversation differently? What's the role of women? I'm sorry, but I don't think there's any way you get an egalitarian role model out of the Bible. I just don't think it's going to happen. I can quote verses to you and do Galatians 5 and say we are neither male nor female, but I'm sorry it ain't the way that they thought. So if we're going to go to a model where men and women have a different sense of egalitarian in our culture, we're just talking about something different. What else has changed?
The role of choosing to be married for love and an individual choice, not just for practical reasons.
Married for love. When did that happen historically? Have any clue?
19th century.
I'm sorry, what?
Chivalry? Yeah. 900.
Yeah. Presumably it's always been there. Jacob married for love in the Old Testament, but for most people the reality was your marriage was arranged. And love would come. Love would follow, hopefully. Alright? But the idea that somebody could actually go out and choose to marry for love is pretty new historically. It's a pretty new thing. It's taken for granted by us today, right? I mean, I could tell my son who to marry and he'd tell me where to go. Right? We're married for love.
The role of men has changed too. I was a house husband for some period of time, 2 years off from this fact, I think.
If the role of women are going to change, the role of men had better change too.
I suppose this is within the role
of children. Has changed.
Role of children has changed. How so?
Not just
labor of property also.
Okay. I'm going to put value on children. Anybody familiar with the rule of thumb?
Mm-hmm.
You know what the rule of thumb is? Ricky's doing his dad talks about that. Rule of thumb was an English law that says you could not beat your child with a switch larger than your thumb. It was a compassionate law. Yeah, so the way we deal with children, the value of children, the place of children has changed. What else has changed in our culture?
Just the way things are, I mean, it's within the roles probably, but inheritance. And
inheritance?
And
yep.
Rise of consumerism.
Consumerism? I'll put that here under the value of children. I think they're related.
Industry.
Industry.
Mobility. I mean, there's just...
Industry being something that has taken families apart. I mean, if you look at the Industrial Revolution of the early 20th century, men left homes and went out to do jobs, whereas before, you were on the farm, your kids were working with you, all sorts of dynamics changed there. Industry and mobility. It's a very significant interest to me that we don't talk about extended families anymore, mm-hmm. except in a grieving sort of way.
Yeah.
I mean, the nuclear family idea is so artificial. What man and woman can do it on their own? My kids are great, they ain't that great. Okay? I mean, you can't do it without aunts, uncles, and the church is trying to pick up that. The church is, in my opinion, the last indigenous multi-generational community that exists. There used to be two extended family in the church. Now there's just one.
I think we've really lost community. We've lost tribalism. We've lost cities that had a need to protect each other from others. We've kind of expanded beyond community, and that's made a lot of these other things irrelevant.
Extended family.
I think that's very important because it means that we have responsibility to far fewer people than we did before. I'll say I used to live here in a community, you have responsibility to everyone. I would call that whole group of 65 people my family. But now you don't even barely call your neighbors friends, let alone family.
You all hear that? Mm-hmm. We are a community of 300, 400 people here in the village, all of whom I think for this week, actually feel we've got responsibility to each other. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I really think you could, if you see somebody else's child falling down in Holden Village, are you going to pick them up and help them?
Absolutely.
Are you at home? Well, yes, but if you see somebody's, you know, if you see somebody's child running down the aisle in church, going, you know, you're going to take that kid by the child and say, hey, shut up. That's what I do with my kid. Do you do that with somebody else's kid?
Sometimes. Yes, but
all right, yeah. A lot of us are doing it. You know? All right. How about things like birth control? Does that change the mix?
Mm-hmm.
How?
We have it.
You can choose to not start the family, and that's, yeah.
You can choose to not start the family, not have the family. You can also choose to have a committed relationship without marriage. Because it's not complicated by the risk of kids, huh? How about medically safe abortion? Does that change the mix? How about surrogate parenting? How about fertility treatments? And that changed the mix on family, how it functions, and the varieties of families that exist in our midst? Pick the top three for me. I just made that part up. What's had the biggest impact on how families are defined or understood today? Can't read my writing, probably. It's tough, isn't it? You got one on?
I got four that I think are big.
All right.
Oh, I only get three.
Shoot. Then
oh, he doesn't make the rules. I make the rules. Give us four.
I think the top three in the left column and the first on the right column.
Role of men and women, married for love, and the value of children, consumerism, birth control. Honest picks. Whatever the causes, let me go back to my question. How far is our traditional model of family being stretched? It's not a question of whether it should or shouldn't be stretched, it's always being stretched. But how far is it being stretched today? And is it still a functional, what was your word? Laura?
The schema?
Is it still a functional schema?
You know, I find in my son's family, the computer plays a big role in the attention of my grandmother. and she comes down from upstairs to eat and goes back up and spends the rest of the night on the computer. And so there's not that, there is interaction. I mean, all the time. I mean, it's the phone's for you.
So let's talk about the family model that goes TV, computer, and two children. How do you like that? How do you like that? You know, I mean, those exist, right? And is not the prophetic word to the church still, are you going to forsake the widow and the orphan? Is it not our responsibility to look at this stuff and say, how do we care for each other?
And one more I'd like to add. I'm a cook, and when I did confirmation, or not, first communion class with Britta, when she was 7, she's now 22, one of the charges to the families that were doing the programs was to have, in the next 2 weeks, three meals together, breakfast, lunch, or dinner, your choice, in a two-week period, and nobody pulled it off.
Wow. Whoa. Wow. 2 weeks, three meals together. All right. So what gives us the variety of families that we exist, that we experience in our world today? Your list, mine, tragedy, failure of parents, a variety, failure of men, leaving the single parenting, government policies, a lack of teaching, birth control, our understanding of homosexuality, which has changed, as well as the roles of men and women. There are people who are gay. Mobility, extended family, all those things, you know. So, So here's the question around family. What about this model is of value to you that you want to preserve and protect? What about that model is of the essence of family for you? It's not two parents, right? I mean, you would like to have two parents, but what's of the essence here?
Relationships.
Unconditional love and support.
Wait a second.
Overlap. You keep drawing the symbols overlapped of the parents.
Okay, you're going ahead here. Let's see, what do we say? Relationships? And by relationships, you mean love and caring, huh? Relationships of love and care, nurture. What else did you say?
And maybe a voluntary nature as well.
Voluntary?
That's it's freely given.
Oh. Good. I was trying to figure out how to deal with this. It's a separate thing. No. Freely given. You had two other things I missed.
Responsibility?
I think unconditional love, by that I mean always committed and connected with your support and love. Not just that you have relationships, but that you are committed to them for until the day you pass on.
Unconditional love, commitment, huh?
Yeah.
Someone mentioned the overlap. What did you say about overlap?
Oh, I just that when you drew it, the picture you got there, that those people are connected. I mean, I think it's just about the relationship.
Yes, they are connected. I'm doing that on purpose. They're connected like this. What does that make you think of?
Venn diagram.
I hate college kids.
Separation
of a cell. No, that's not what it makes you think of. It makes you think of marriage. Okay? It makes you think of marriage. All right.
That was my next guess.
I'm glad we got that. Okay.
What does, what else do you want to preserve here?
A sense of the commitment that sometimes when you're, I think unconditional love and care and nurturing is really great, but sometimes when you're married, you don't like them very much,
uh-huh.
and you stay because you're committed to the commitment, and hopefully if you work at it right, the warm stuff, you know, works back in. But some days you're just doing it because that's what I promised to do. I mean, keeping that sense of commitment and promise.
Okay.
I don't know how else to describe it.
Well, I think you said it well.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you asking us why it's the man-woman? Because what we've written up there doesn't seem to be anything I wouldn't want for the same-sex couples, if that were the choice. So are you asking why we want to see the man or woman?
What I ask is, what about the traditional model? Man, woman, married, kids. Do you want to try to keep the essence of family?
Positive role model.
Pardon?
Positive role modeling for kids.
There's nothing in here about positive role modeling. But okay. That's fine. We want to keep positive role modeling.
Well, wait a minute.
But are you talking about that relative to men and women?
I'm sorry?
Are you talking about that relative to a father and a mother?
No, just in general.
Okay.
But the idea that all the people in the community around it will recognize that as a family.
Ah.
And they have widespread social, economic, and cultural support in their task as family.
Does that mean acceptance?
Yes. Not beyond acceptance. They have, I mean, there are all kinds of breaks. You know, tax breaks.
Let's go there.
Various other, all kinds.
Let's go there. Because we're going there later in the week. How are we doing on time? Oh, terrible. Okay. We're talking about family. We're talking about relationships of love and care and nurture. We're talking about commitment and responsibility. We're talking about positive role modeling. We're talking about the rest of the culture. Understand what's going on here. All right? My son, my oldest son, called up his first year of marriage, his first year of school, college, and said he was going to stay. I said, what does that mean? What am I supposed to infer from this? That you're sexually active or not sexually active, or that you're not dating other women, or that you're saving money because you're only doing this? What am I supposed to infer from that? Is going steady a category? As opposed to going with someone, which is what my daughter in high school or middle school said.
Well, those are different.
As opposed to, I know they're different, but I have no clue what they mean. And with my son, it's a word, my daughter, I care a lot what this means. You know, just because, you know, so social recognition, your point here, what does the culture understand? Has not, and this is another thing I'm trying to pull on you, okay? I don't want to talk about marriage and family. I want to talk about family in all its varieties and where and how marriage fits into that picture. I want to go the other direction, okay? And this was your point. What now does marriage, and we will leave that word unqualified for now, what does marriage do for social recognition and support of the family? Ma'am, would you please, what's your name?
Dorothy.
Dorothy, would you start?
Yes. Well, you get to have, you get health insurance benefits, social security advantages, taxes debatable, but you're, at least you get, you're in this together.
Inheritance.
So, you know, people sort of invite you to things together. Social benefits of that kind.
Okay, Bert. Bert, do you want Bert not to have inheritance from Steve? Just because his parents aren't married, or he's not legally adopted? What's in Bert's best interest? Do you want Steve not to be able to ascertain health insurance for his kids because they're foster kids and not adopted kids? I mean, you understand what I'm asking? Okay. How does marriage serve the family? Because, you know, that's what it's for historically, is to serve the family. Okay, any more things you want to add?
Emotional support from the community.
Emotional support from the community. What happens at a, well, we'll do that at our next session. What happens at a wedding? Everybody goes, oh, we're there for you.
But there's also, I guess this said, it goes back to commitment, but just the essence of belonging. You know, the couple, I mean, we're together for life. Mm-hmm. That's rich. And the children knowing that, so no matter going through what, ever, mm-hmm. you're together.
Yeah. See, the Lofton family, is it serious risk?
Yeah.
Nobody belongs to anybody there. Yeah. That's not true. The kids all belong to the state.
There's a whole lot of legal things that we often don't think about, but like if your spouse is in a car accident, you get to make decisions for them because, mm-hmm. I mean, you get a whole, in some states you get property if somehow, yeah. You get responsibilities if you do divorce. They have, you know, legal defined responsibilities towards the children.
If my son, going steady with a girl in college, goes on a weekend trip,
yeah.
And they get a car wreck,
he has no say.
And he or she are in the hospital, the other one has no say. Yeah. Who are they?
Sometimes they can't even get him to visit them.
Absolutely, you know. Which is probably appropriate for that relationship. You know, I think her parents have not yet said, we're going to give you, Aaron, whoever you are, haven't met you, control over her legal decisions. You know, but for couples in committed relationships that aren't blessed by the state, it's a different issue. Somebody else had a hand up here.
You said marriage helps or supports the family. And maybe this is a colder way of looking at it, but be quite frank, I don't know your family, and I, on a personal level, really don't even care because it doesn't affect me. But I think marriage, and even from a historical context, as you're talking about, marriage really supported the community. And it seems to me, I, as a member of the community, am very interested in having a system that historically has provided some stability to protect the community. I may not be saying this very well, but and we think so much in the individual basis and the use of the word love. And I said unconditional love, but I like the commitment, the structure, the predictability that family gives, so that I
you want think, order.
I don't like the word order, but as a community, it gives me more comfort to know that there are units that are taking care of the HIV children in a for their position, a healthy, a supportive role, and on a personal basis, I don't know them, I will never be involved with them, on a personal basis, it's beyond me, because they're living in Florida,
yeah.
But from the standpoint of protecting the society, protecting the stability, protecting the good of the order of whatever our community is, I like the fact that there is a tested framework which sets up responsibilities and provides for maybe a love that I don't understand, but it is there, and provides for, like the Holden thing, where you're going to have something which is going to take care of the little two-year-old kid who's wandering down there, and I like that protection or order of the community. And
or said even more coldly, Les is very happy to know that my marriage to my wife protects him.
Right.
So if I go get some woman pregnant, my wife, he doesn't have to pay for it. The state knows exactly who's going to have to pay for that child, me. Les says, I like that. I like to know who's responsible, that I don't get dumped with your mistakes. Marriage protects, I'm being real crude, but you understand marriage protects not only the couple and the family, marriage protects also the community outside the family with clarity and understanding how these things work. And that's part of the social recognition and responsibility. When my wife and I got married, we merged our assets and we merged our debts. And the community wants to know about that. They want her to change her name and slip out from under debts, right?
I would say too that, you know, it's important to talk about what is and what should be, and the fact that, you know, you're saying, for example, I don't have a stake in that family, which is true for you because they're in Florida. Mm-hmm. But for example, there's this ideal, you know, when I lived here, a couple got married at the beginning of their time as community members here and spent their first year of marriage at the Village. And that's very close to the ideal, because you have a married couple with a community of friends and family that are supporting them, and we can't pretend that maybe, you know, legally we'll let this gay couple marry, but it doesn't matter whether or not we really support them as a community, just legally we're going to let them. I mean, how hard is it? You know, does that make sense?
That makes total sense, and we're going to end with that, because it's time to quit. Let me just summarize that point. When we're talking about the, quote, ideal or traditional or
schema
of marriage, this one, I am not trying to talk about what's a better or more valuable marriage than a less valuable marriage. That language is not helpful to us in any discussion that we as Christians want to have. But I want to acknowledge that we have this picture in our head. And I think there are some things here that we want to keep from the schema. I think there are some things. You listed a few. We're not so attached to making sure that married, the couples have kids anymore, because we've got enough of those to go around already, you know. But there are, we can make a list of things that come out of the schema which we still value and want to protect. I believe when people are getting their backs about family, they're trying to protect something. And they're afraid of losing something out of this schema model that hasn't been articulated yet. That's a big part of our problem. The issue, however, is more of this one. Given the variety of families that exist, the variety of family structures that exist in our culture and society, and they're huge in number. Okay. Is not the question that comes to us biblically, how are you going to take care of the orphan and the widow? How are you going to deal with this variety of families? How are you going to make it work, people? How are you going to care for these people? How are you going to take people where they're at in their family structure, Naomi, and get her functional again? How are you going to handle those family structures? I think that's the question for us. That's why I want to talk about family first and marriage second. Because marriage is the traditional way of doing a whole lot of that. There are over 1,000 legal protections and benefits for couples who are married. Over 1,000. Added to the state benefits, which are another couple hundred. Not only things you've mentioned, but things like access to abuse shelters if you're a wife with your children. I mean, there's all sorts of things that the state has done. Kingdom on the left, the one that does not wield the sword in vain, the one authorized by God to take care of things on a certain level. There's all sorts of things that the state does around marriage to support family. Why are you robbing Bert of that stuff? In this family. Okay, so that's where we're at today. Is that a good place to stop? Okay, I have no session tomorrow. Thursday, if you're still interested in pursuing this, the next session will be, that's a tough one. Go to the other session, it's better. This will be 6:30 in Creekside.
6:30 here is a video on the Iraq War issue. I'm going to this one, so you can go over there and talk to me. But if you want to do this, 6:30 Creekside on Thursday, we're going to look at the marriage service in the Lutheran Book of Worship. This is the blessing part of my topic. And talk about how the church, in our current practice of marriage, is trying to value and deal with this. Okay. And then on Friday, we'll talk about more about alternatives. And then my last session Saturday morning, if you're still here and interested, we'll look at some of the changes around marital practice, potential changes around marital practice in the Lutheran Church and what we're trying to do with that.
Are you going to also look at the Renewing Worship
yes.
materials?
On Friday, on Saturday morning, we'll look at Renewing Worship marriage materials. Okay? Go have lunch. Thank you all. Thank you.